Yeah, that mighty city is Mystery Babylon, the empire of merchants that rules the world today. Is there any doubt that this empire of merchants rules the world today, Pastor Steve?
New York City!
Yeah, there you go. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Yahweh's Covenant People here on Eurofolk Radio, eurofolkradio.com. Today is the 12th of January. It's already the 12th of January, 2018. Man, what happened to the last 12 days? They flew by.
Yeah, well, like we've been so busy kicking that butt, you know.
Yeah,
that,
right. Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, my leg's getting tired from kicking Jew butt. But we're back. And this is, since Pastor Greg is under the weather, he's got the flu. Man, a lot
of
people
got the kung fu flu.
Yeah, right. It's been going around. Paul in London's had it for 2 weeks. Hasn't been able to do the Fake News Now show. So instead of going into the Second Esdras book, chapter 8, which was our plan, we decided to do a very interesting article here at wildboar.net, and the title is Who Financed Lenin and Trotsky? So this will be a a scripture theme, although certainly we can tie it to scripture because we know who these people are. And
it's going to be a current events thing too, because they're financing all the other stuff that's going on today. Same people,
right.
Maybe a different generation, but they're the same ilk.
But the bloodline of the Illuminati versus the bloodline of Adam, right? That's Genesis 3:15. That's what this is all about.
There we go. That's.
Yeah. And I have to find it in my bookmarks, but Paul English gave me an alternative method of accessing the chat room. I'm going to try to do that as we proceed. But let me begin here. Again, this is Who Financed Lenin and Trotsky? And the link is so long, I'm not even going to try to name it. But anyway, it's at www.wildboar.net, and it's B-O-A-R, Wild Boar. Who Financed Lenin and Trotsky? A quote from Creature from Jekyll Island. Now, I haven't read the Creature from Jekyll Island, but I understand it's basically a reworking of Eustace Mullins' book on the same subject. Mm-hmm. Although Edward Griffin doesn't go into the Jewish question as much as our good friend does. Okay. But he says this is the top communist leaders have never been as hostile to their counterparts in the West as the rhetoric suggests. They are quite friendly to the world's leading financiers, that is the communists, the leading communists, not the rank and file. The rank and file are dupes, and have worked closely with them when it suits their purpose. Well, they've been working closely with them from the beginning. You know, Michael Sweet and I did a show go ahead.
They're the same people.
They're the same people. They're Jews.
I mean, they need money. Well,
yeah,
their fake tribal brethren finance their machinations, as long as it winds up with a lot of murder of the Adamic seed line.
Yes,
they're all for that. So that's their thing: murder and domination. That's
right. Yes. Okay, well, it's interesting. Okay, I just brought it up. Let me see. Test. Very good. All right, I'm into the chat room, even though my screen doesn't show the chat button on it. But anyway, so this gave me a back door to get into the chat room. So good evening, everybody. I see Tea Times there, Harry Mack, Pastor Dan, and a bunch of other people. All right, so
I'm there too. I just haven't posted anything yet.
Yeah, okay. And so let's continue here. I see I have to go back. to rats. I lost it. Have you got it up, Pastor Steve?
What, to who financed Lenin and Trotsky?
Yes.
Of course I did. Yeah, I got all these computers here. I got them.
Switching over to the chat room, I lost it. So go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me hit my little magnifying glass. This is
okay.
Small. There we go. Now that ain't going to work.
No, okay, I got it back.
No, the magnifying glass is just too big.
Too big? Oh, it's too big.
The top communist leaders have never been as hostile to their counterparts in the West as the rhetoric suggests. They are quite friendly to the world's leading financiers, the banksters,
mm-hmm.
and have worked closely with them when it suits their purposes. As we shall see in the following section, the Bolshevik Revolution actually was financed by wealthy financiers in London and New York. Lenin and Trotsky were on the closest of terms with these moneyed interests both before and after the revolution. Let's stop right here. Mm-hmm. They use money as a tool for their agenda. The money itself doesn't mean anything. It's only what they can do with it,
right,
and who they can use it against. That's their modus operandi.
Yes. Yeah.
Continuing on. Those hidden liaisons have continued to this day, and occasionally pop to the surface when we discover a David Rockefeller holding confidential meetings with a Mikhail Gorbachev in the absence of government sponsorship or diplomatic purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Oy vey, tovarich, what you about to do? Such a deal I got for you, Tovarich. Yeah.
Free money to kill white people, right?
Well.
And of course, Jewry idolizes Trotsky and Lenin and Marx, right? They're great heroes of Jewry. And,
well, these are quotes from The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yeah, yeah. So this is G. Edward Griffin. He's not going to use the word Jew. I don't think he uses the word Jew anywhere in the book, not like Eustace Mullins does. Okay. And that was from page 123. Now, pages 263 to 267, chapter 13, Masquerade in Moscow. One of the greatest myths of contemporary history is that the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia was a popular uprising of the downtrodden masses against the hated ruling class of the czars. How would you describe it, Pastor Steve?
It was fomented behind the scenes, very, very highly coordinated,
mm-hmm.
very well planned. As they dupe our people today, they dupe the people then.
Right, yeah.
Their politics is the politics of lies to elicit a certain
yes.
response.
Yes.
Usually violence against, and if they can get our people to kill our people, kill our own people, they love that. That's
yes.
their main entertainment.
Yes, and as you're speaking, it just occurred to me if this is proof that the Illuminati and Freemasonry had not been as far advanced in America in 1776. Of course, they had only founded the Illuminati in May 1st, 1776, and our revolution against the Jew banksters, and that's who we revolted against, not just George III, but the Jew banksters of the Bank of England, just a few months later, on July 4th, 1776. However, by 1789, in France, they had virtually taken over the entire government of Louis the 16th, okay? And they were then known as Jacobins after, you know, they basically, the word Jacobin in The French Revolution term simply means a follower of the Jews. Okay? So the leaders of the Jacobins were Jews, but the Freemasons who followed them were also called Jacobins. Okay? So by the French Revolution, they had totally organized this revolution with the inevitable outcome to kill Louis XIV, Marie Antoinette, and as many, what's the word? Not just royals. What do you call the nobility? As many of the nobility as possible and as many white people as possible. And then the Jews had planned to take France over. Totally. Once the smoke cleared.
Well, they can't do it on their own. They have to do our people.
Right.
There's to kill our people.
That's right. That's right. And so with the experience they gained in the American Revolution, having lost it, and there was only, even though George Washington was a Freemason, there were only 3 degrees of Masonry here in America. And they hadn't been Illuminized yet. The Rothschilds had not sent their agents over here yet to take control. And Freemasonry was not a monolithic structure anyway. The various lodges were independent of the others. And it was the goal of the Illuminati to organize all the lodges under their single head, okay? And that was called Grand Orient Freemasonry. That's what took over the French Revolution. That did not exist here in America. And that had the 33 degrees, which was, a much bigger outfit, much more powerful than the 3 degrees of Masonry in America, which was independent of European Masonry. A lot of people don't realize that, okay? So let's continue here. The amazing story begins with the war between Russia and Japan in 1904. Jacob Schiff, who was the head of the New York investment firm Kuhn, Loeb & Company, had raised the capital for large war loans to Japan. It was due to this funding that the Japanese were able to launch a stunning attack against the Russians at Port Arthur and the following year to virtually decimate the Russian fleet. In 1905, the Mikado awarded Jacob Schiff a medal, the Second Order of the Treasure of Japan, in recognition of his important role in that campaign. Now, this is something that the history books do not contain, Pastor Steve. The international finagling of Jewish financiers.
Yeah, any time they can engineer the death of non-Jews, and you have to understand that the Jews have infiltrated Japan.
Yes.
As Elijah Toyota, Toyota Motors, Jewish.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
They breed with all the races.
Yes, they do.
And that's what people fail to understand. They want to look like the indigenous people as much as they can. So they breed with them, but they bring that poisonous taint in their blood, and once they mix, they produce a branch of doomed people.
Right.
In that
Lucifer's
nation.
Blood, right?
Well, okay, a little bit of cyanide is still cyanide.
That's right. Yeah. Tainted blood is tainted blood.
It kills the spirit. And if they had any glimmer of the Holy Spirit, they wouldn't do what they do. But they have none, so they feel completely unfettered. And the most heinous and egregious murder campaign and lies, it doesn't faze them. They don't think anything of it because it's their nature. And we recoil in horror at their actions because we are a spirit-filled people.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot comprehend the satanic bent that they have. It's just beyond us. How can you do that? Well, and they answer, well,
they're Jews.
That's
different.
What we are.
They're different.
You know, people, a rattlesnake is still a rattlesnake. It may be pretty, and you may feed it in its cage. But if you stick your hand down in there, stupid white boy, it's going to bite you.
That's right. That's right. Jacob Schiff was head of the New York investment firm Kuhn, Loeb & Company. He was one of the principal backers of the Bolshevik Revolution and personally financed Trotsky's trip from New York to Russia. Okay. Now, that's saying a lot, given the fact that this book was, well, it's more or less a mainstream book. Okay. But, you know, when we say things like this, we're called conspiracy theorists, you know. But this is in G. Edward Griffin's book. He was a major contributor to Woodrow Wilson's presidential campaign and an advocate for passage of the Federal Reserve Act. Surprise, surprise. What banker was it?
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. What Jew banker was it? What Jew wasn't? During the 2 years of hostilities, thousands of Russian soldiers and sailors were taken as prisoners. Sources outside of Russia, which were hostile to the Tsarist regime, paid for the printing of Marxist propaganda and had it delivered into the prison camps. Russian-speaking revolutionaries were trained in New York and sent to distribute the pamphlets among the prisoners and to indoctrinate them into rebellion against their own government.
Yep.
Are they doing that here in America, Pastor Steve?
They sure are. Yep. Except they use their television, their Talmud vision.
Right.
And all the movies.
Yep.
I mean, you go through the movie list on Putlocker or YouTube or anything, and they're all satanic-based movies.
Yeah.
And I have to struggle to find something to watch.
That isn't pro-Jewish.
Well, that isn't satanic-based, because the eyes are the windows of the soul. I don't want that going into my head.
Right.
I have bad dreams and stuff after that.
Yeah, really.
Whoa.
When the war was ended, these officers and enlisted men returned home to become virtual seeds of treason against the Tsar, okay? So, again, indoctrination. Now, you can see that the soldiers would have been, you know, upset having lost the war and having become prisoners, okay? The Tsar would, that's probably the last thing the Tsar would have expected, is that his own soldiers would have been brainwashed by propaganda while they were in prison in Japan or held by the Japanese. I'm sure the Tsar could not have conceived of such a thing, but this is the type of thing that Jews do, okay? They were able to play a major role, but definitely they weren't the leaders of the revolution. It's always Jews who are leaders of these communist-style revolutions. And that's what Michael Sweet and I talked about.
Well, these men were only cannon fodder.
Right,
Very effective cannon fodder.
That's right.
But they were the ones that took the bullets, not the leaders.
Yeah, and it was Moses Hess, the Jew who was also a rabbi, who took Karl Marx under his wing. He taught communism to Karl Marx, but he also founded the Zionist movement. Okay? So he founded Zionism and communism at the same time. Why do you think that is, Pastor Steve? Why would one Jew invent both doctrines?
Well, this was well planned out. He was thinking ahead to the future. Yeah. Very much a futurist.
There you go.
even though they don't believe that they have resurrection, it was all for the tribe, quote unquote.
Right. I guess the only future they have is progeny, right? But those are destined to be eliminated entirely as well. Just look in Obadiah, okay?
We're waiting.
Yep, we're waiting very patiently. They were to play a major role a few years later in creating mutiny among the military during the communist takeover of Russia, okay? Again, this was all very carefully planned. Very carefully planned. So Jacob Schiff saw the opportunity to create a hostile element within the military by fomenting war with Japan And of course, the soldiers blamed Russia, blamed the Tsar, but it was Japan that started that war. And yeah. Jews financed it. Okay. Trotsky
Go ahead. Dead Jews in Japan.
That's right. Right. Trotsky was a multiple agent. One of the best known Russian revolutionaries at that time was Leon Trotsky. In January of 1916, excuse me, Trotsky was expelled from France and came to the United States. Of course, New York City. It has been claimed that his expenses were paid by Jacob Schiff. There is no documentation to substantiate that claim, but the circumstantial evidence does point to a wealthy donor in New York. I believe, actually, that Schiff rented an apartment for Trotsky. Anyway, he remained for several months while writing for a Russian socialist paper, The New World, and giving revolutionary speeches at mass meetings in New York City. According to Trotsky himself, on many occasions, a chauffeured limousine was placed at his service by a wealthy friend identified as Dr. M. In his book, My Life, Trotsky wrote this. The doctor, this is Dr. M., so the full name is not given. The doctor's wife took my wife and the boys out driving and was very kind to them. But she was a mere mortal, whereas a chauffeur was a magician, a titan, a superman. With the wave of his hand, he made the machine obey his slightest command. Maybe he had never ridden a car before. To sit beside him was the supreme delight. When they went into a tea room, the boys would anxiously demand of their mother, "Why doesn't the chauffeur come in?" My life, Leon. So anyway, this is a very obscure quote. Who's this Dr. M? But certainly a rich banker like Jacob Schiff could wave his hand and make people do things they ordinarily wouldn't do. Right? Or they'd lose their job, yep. or worse. Okay?
Yeah. That money, power.
Money is power. Power.
Yep. Money, power.
It must have been a curious sight to see the family of the great socialist radical, defender of the working class, enemy of capitalism, enjoying the pleasures of tea rooms and chauffeurs, the very symbols of capitalist luxury.
So, oh, he's such a deal we have for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, some well, let me put it this way. All Jews enjoy luxury.
Oh, sure.
Okay. At the same time, they enjoy revolution.
Sure. They don't do the fighting.
As long as they don't do the fighting.
They enjoy sitting back and watch white people kill other white people.
That's right. Yeah. No more Jewish wars, folks. That's our motto, no more Jewish wars. On March 23, 1917, a mass meeting was held at Carnegie Hall to celebrate the abdication of Nicholas II, which meant the overthrow of Tsarist rule in Russia. Thousands of socialists, Marxists, nihilists, and anarchists attended to cheer the event. The following day, there was a unpublished on page 2 of the New York Times, a telegram from Jacob Schiff, which had been read to this audience. He expressed regrets that he could not attend and then described the successful Russian Revolution as, quote, what we had hoped and striven for these long years, unquote. Okay, that was published in the New York Times, March 24, 1917. So this is Jacob Schiff admitting that he aided and abetted the Bolshevik coup. In the February 3rd, 1949 issue of New York Journal, American, Schiff's grandson John was quoted by columnist Charlie Knickerbocker as saying that his grandfather had given about $20 million for the triumph of communism in Russia. $20 million. Now, I'm also aware, Pastor Steve, that Warburg, I forget which Warburg brother, there are three or four of them, might have been Felix Warburg, in Germany, gave Lenin $20 million for the same purpose. So between Schiff and Warburg, $40 million in the year 1917 would buy a lot of guns and ammo.
Buy a lot now.
Yep, even today. Can you imagine how much you could buy then?
Yeah.
Right? Right?
Absolutely.
To appraise Schiff's motives for supporting the Bolsheviks, we must remember, it does mention the word Jew, that he was a Jew, and that Russian Jews had been persecuted under the Tsarist regime. Now, let's underscore this. Is this a true statement? Russian Jews had been persecuted under the Tsarist regime.
No, that is not a true statement.
That is not a true statement. Not at all. And as a matter of fact, the Tsars had created the Pale as a separate, virtually a separate country, supported by Tsarist Russia so that the Jews could live amongst themselves.
Well, they always want their ghettos.
Yes. And they were not prohibited from doing anything within the Pale. They could live as Jews within the Pale, but they did not like that arrangement because that prevented the parasites from taking advantage of the Russian peasants. Okay? They had all the free education they wanted. Okay? There was no Tsarist official telling Jews, you can't do this, you can't do that, in the Pale. The only thing was that they could not leave the Pale and exploit Russian peasants outside the Pale. That's mm-hmm. the arrangement. That's not persecution. That is giving them a homeland of their own, even though it was now that I think of it, it fulfills the promise that Isaac made to Jacob and Esau, that the elder would serve the younger. Okay, even as at this late date, Pastor Steve, the Jews would serve the descendants of Jacob Israel, namely the Tsars, the kings and queens of England, the Kaisers of Germany, etc., etc. So this gives us a reflection as to the other part of Isaac's quote when he said to Esau, "The day will come when you shall have the dominion over your brother Jacob."
Yep.
Okay. So this history fits that prophecy. I never thought about that before. So anyway, that is a complete untrue statement. The Jews had not been persecuted under the Tsarist regime. As a matter of fact, the Tsars had actually done all they could to protect Jews from the peasant revolts. These peasant revolts, or so-called pogroms, were always started by the peasants themselves, not by the government of Russia. Now, why do you think these peasants, these poor Russian, Polish, German peasants, and Czechoslovakian, and what have you, the poor Christian peasants of Europe, why do you think they would rise up and start wanting to kill Jews? Why do you think that, why do you think that would happen?
Usury and money lending.
Mm-hmm.
They were victims of these creatures.
Now you would think
that they are deceivers. They're very subtle. They sneak in, and they entrap people.
Yeah, the same thing actually happened in Spain before Isabella kicked the Jews out. What had happened was that the Jews had corrupted the country of Spain to such an extent, and they had infiltrated the churches, as they've done today here in America and Britain and the rest of the world, and taken over the economics of the country. They had high-ranking crypto Jews everywhere in the Spanish government. But the Jews, these crypto Jews, were working with government officials to oppress the people. So it was actually a conspiracy of the Spanish nobility and the Jews to oppress the Spanish people. And it was the Spanish people who rose up, not the Spanish government. Isabella tried to defuse the situation, but when the people demanded the heads of the Jews, she expelled them. This has never been the decision of the government by itself. This has always been at the demand of the people to expel the Jews. I guess we're going to just have to demand it again, Pastor Steve.
Well, I think it's already starting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're just about there.
The tolerance, people are waking up. There's a lot of murmuring in the background. Not on alt-right sites. I mean, even on the internet, people are discussing this openly.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, they're going to be watched and targeted, but there's just too many.
All right. Yeah, there's too many of us.
So, like rats in a big city.
Right.
And you can never eliminate them. You can get a few.
Right. But as long as you keep feeding them.
Rats did you remember that movie, Wilbur?
I've heard of it. I don't think I...
The guy
vaguely.
That trained rats, and he poisoned a bunch of the rats. And the other rats looked at him, and they knew that he wasn't their friend, so they all broke out, and they ate him. They ate him.
Wow. They figured that out, huh? Smart rats. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, right. So that's a lie. The Jews were not persecuted in Russia. Never, and they weren't persecuted in Poland either. They definitely weren't persecuted in Germany. So this lie that the Jews tell that they've been persecuted is just that. It's a perfidious Jew lie.
The Holocaust!
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, consequently, the Jewish community in America was inclined to support any movement which sought to topple the Russian government. And the Bolsheviks were excellent candidates for the task. Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. The American Jews actually supported Germany at the beginning of World War I. They supported Germany against Russia. And this explains why. Okay. So how did the world Jewry turn against Germany before the war ended? How did that happen?
Oh, they were against Germany. Before the war.
Well, I mean, they supported...
Because the Germans were the strongest Aryan people.
Yeah. But
and
Germany...
It doesn't matter about political national affiliation.
Oh, I'm not saying they love Germans.
It's a racial thing.
Right.
They want to destroy Jacob.
Right, right.
They can't help themselves.
But in the war, in World War I... Jews worldwide supported Germany against Russia, okay, because they hated the Tsar so much. Doesn't mean they loved the Germans.
No.
However, before World War I started, Germany had given Jews sanctuary from whatever country they were fleeing from, be it Russia, Poland, or wherever, and actually gave sanctuary to the Jews for about 60 or 70 years leading up to World War I. Okay?
So it's their nature to bite the hand that feeds.
There you go.
Well, we're talking about genetic disposition here, Eli.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can't help it. They are what they are. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Right. Well, though, actually, what happened historically, David James and I did a couple of shows about this. Despite the fact that Germany had treated the Jews so well for 60, 70 years in the middle of the 19th and toward the end of this, and even into the 20th century, when the Jews had an opportunity to snatch Palestine away from Germany and Turkey, the world Zionists simply said to the Jews, okay, it's time for you to start hating the Germans. And they did. The Zionists snapped their fingers, and Jews everywhere suddenly hated Germany.
They still do.
And they still do. Yes, that's how easy it is for these moneylenders to manipulate the rank and file Jews. That's all it took. All right. He continues, as we shall see further along, however, there were also strong financial incentives for Wall Street firms such as Kuhn, Loeb & Company, of which Schiff was a senior partner, and he's also a Rothschild agent, to see the old regime fall into the hands of revolutionaries who would agree to grant lucrative business concessions in the future in return for financial support today. In other words, the Jews could buy up the real estate of the losing country for cheap, right? And then, yep, you know, and sell it. This is what they actually did here in America after World War II. They created the Great Depression, bought up all that farmland for cheap, and then sold it at a profit after the war ended. So-called baby boomers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But here, for Russia, they had a completely different agenda. And it wasn't to sell real estate after taking over the country. It was simply to slaughter as many white people as they possibly could.
Right.
All right. Is there any other explanation for the Bolshevik coup?
No, that was their main. That was their main objective. That was their modus operandi.
Right.
That's why they're hated so much in Russia today, and they're.
Yes.
The Russian people are.
Yeah. And in Poland, and you know, they've done a brainwashing job on the Germans since World War II, no doubt about that. Okay, but
some
the old line Eastern Europeans still hate Jews. They still hate Jews because they know that Judaism and communism go hand in glove.
I was watching and looking at that video of the young German soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving Nazi salutes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You mean today?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're whole sections of the military in Deutschland that
aren't buying your
crap
anymore.
And you look at all the young German soldiers.
Yeah, the younger, that's the good thing.
They're all white. You don't see a black or a Muslim or anything else in there. They're all blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Aryan types, and they're waking up, and they're talking among themselves behind the scenes. They're very careful what they say, where they say it. Like, we're starting to turn down a few things here.
Yeah.
After concerted attacks on us, PayPal and... you're banned from this and you're banned from that. That's why we have our own server.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why we have to have our own server.
Just, and all we do is tell the truth. Well, they're jailing journalists for telling the truth.
Yeah.
They jailed
Canadian lady, I forget her name.
Canadian lady, for apologizing to her mother in an email, private email, that she was wrong about the Holocaust.
Yeah, actually she did
a
video.
And they've got her locked up.
Right, they arrested
her
for denying the Holocaust, right.
And she didn't even do it in Germany.
That's right. She did it in Canada.
It's a worldwide. Well,
I thought Canada was part of Britain, not Germany.
You you don't come over here.
Mm-hmm.
You said what you said over there, but if you come over here, we're going to lock you up.
Yep. I don't.
So they need a real serious revolution in Germany.
Yeah. Right. Yes, they do. Yep. And from what you're saying, it sounds like they're going to get it. Well, that would fulfill Senor Van Rensburg's prophecy. He was a South African prophet, a very devout Christian, and probably also knew that he was an Israelite. So he was Christian identity. And he predicted that Germany would revolt against the current world order and assist South Africa once again. That's an amazing prophecy. Okay, because they assisted South Africa before against the Jews.
It's going to have to go back to the point where it's Deutschland für Deutschland, Ausländer raus.
Yes. Juden, raus. Raus mit them. Yes.
Raus mit du.
Yeah, that's the way it's going to have to be. So that's an astounding prophecy. And the first time I read this prophecy was maybe 10 years ago. And at that time, I said, not with Germany today, not the Germany of what's her face? Merkel. Angela Merkel. Not under Angela Merkel. I said, well, Merkel's going to have to go first. And then I could see it. So
somebody's going to offer.
Yeah, or well, she'll just get unelected.
Somebody will sacrifice themselves. They'll just walk up and just pop her.
That's possible.
Pow!
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, given the rape fest that the Merkel has engendered there of white women, the outrage has to be brewing, Pastor Steve. It's got to be ready to overflow.
Well, you are only presented with the opinions of the libtards.
That's right.
The people behind the scenes that feel as we do never get the press.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They're suppressed. Yeah. So people are of the opinion that the majority of the German people are all for this.
Yes.
When they indeed are not.
Yes, yes. Same thing. Jews control the press and make like the whole country's liberal when it's not, right?
That's
it's only a small proportion. When Trotsky returned to Petrograd in May of 1917 to organize the Bolshevik phase of the Russian Revolution, he carried $10,000 for travel expenses. Now, that's some serious travel expenses. A generously ample fund considering the value of the dollar at that time. Trotsky was arrested by Canadian and British naval personnel when the ship on which he was traveling, the SS Christianfjord, put in at Halifax. The money in his possession is now a matter of official record. The source of that money has been the focus of much speculation, but the evidence strongly suggests that its origin was the German government, or I would say Jacob Schiff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And hail victory right back at you, Dan.
Yeah. Right. It was a sound investment. Yeah, Trotsky left New York City with that money. With that money. And it was Jacob Schiff who, because there was a war going on, folks, and Canada was fighting against Russia at the time. So what's this Jew from New York City, what does he want to go to Russia for? This was the thinking of the authorities in Halifax, right? What do you got all this money for? You know, are you carrying on your own war? What are you doing, right? So the authorities in Halifax had every right to detain Trotsky. But it was Jacob Schiff who said, let him go. It was Jacob Schiff who gave that order.
Mm-hmm.
This is totally contrary to, the war.
Well, he was arrested as a German agent and taken as a prisoner of war.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So they assumed that, he was going to fight on the side of Germany, which, of course, was wrong, right? But they had to be suspicious. What's this guy doing going to Russia with all this money? In any case, Trotsky was not arrested on a whim. He was recognized as a threat to the best interests of England, Canada's mother country in the British Commonwealth. Russia was an ally of England in the First World War, which then was raging in Europe. Anything that would weaken Russia, and that certainly included internal revolution, would be in effect to strengthen Germany and weaken England. So that's their thinking. In New York, on the night before his departure, Trotsky had given a speech in which he said, quote, I am going to back to Russia to overthrow the provisional government and stop the war with Germany. Okay, well, that was his true intention. We know that now. But the officials in Halifax were simply suspicious. Okay. A full report on this meeting had been submitted to the U.S. military intelligence. See Senate Document Number 62, 66th Congress, Report and Hearings of the Subcommittee on the Judiciary, United States Senate 1919, Volume 2, page 2680. Trotsky therefore represented a real threat to England's war effort, at least as they perceived it. He was arrested as a German agent and taken as a prisoner of war. They should have kept him in jail. With this in mind, we can appreciate the great strength of those mysterious forces, both in England and the United States, that intervened on Trotsky's behalf. Immediately, telegrams began to come into Halifax from such divergent sources as an obscure attorney in New York City, from the Canadian Deputy Postmaster General, and even from a high-ranking British military officer, all inquiring into Trotsky's situation and ordering his immediate release.
Urging.
The head of the British Secret Service in America at the time was Sir William Wiseman. You want to guess what genotype he is?
This man?
Who, as fate would have it, occupied the apartment directly above the apartment of Edward Mandel House.
Another kike,
and who had become fast friends with him, kikes of a kind. House advised Wiseman that President Wilson wished to have Trotsky released. So the order came from the White House. Wiseman advised his government and the British Admiralty issued orders on April 21st that Trotsky was to be sent on his way. From the article, Why Did We Let Trotsky Go? How Canada Lost an Opportunity to Shorten the War. From Maclean's Magazine, Canada, June 1919. Or so, that's how they saw it. It was a fateful decision that would affect not only the outcome of the war, but the future of the entire world. No lie. It would be a mistake to conclude that Jacob Schiff and Germany were the only players in this drama. Trotsky could not have gone even as far as Halifax without having been granted an American passport, and this was accomplished by the personal intervention of President Wilson.
Well, Wilson was a Jew.
Okay. He wasn't a Baptist? I thought he was a Baptist. Everybody says he's a Baptist.
He was a Jew.
Yeah. Wolfson, I think, was the original family name. Wolfson, and it was anglicized to Wilson. Professor Anthony Sutton says, quote, President Woodrow Wilson was the fairy godmother who provided Trotsky with a passport to return to Russia to carry forward the revolution. At the same time, careful State Department bureaucrats concerned about such revolutionaries entering Russia were unilaterally attempting to tighten up passport procedures. All right. So, while the State Department was trying to tighten up passport procedures, Woodrow Wilson was loosening them for this international Jew named Leon Trotsky. Should we be surprised, folks? Oh, by the way.
Well, how many of these Jewish spies have been pardoned and released here?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's over and over and over. Those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it.
Yes, yes. About the only Jewish spies that were ever caught and sentenced were the Rosenbergs, right?
Well, they made somebody mad.
Yeah, they sure did. Right? But there were still a lot more patriots in the government and in the military in those days. You know, not anymore.
Right.
Anyway, that quote was taken from Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
That is an outstanding book. I have it in my library.
They worked hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So books like that.
Because the Wall Street interest got a chance to gut Russia and steal everything from there.
That's right.
Communism and capitalism are two sides of the same coin.
Yes. That's right. Both invented by Moses Hess, Rabbi Moses Hess. Continuing. And there were others as well. In 1911, the St. Louis Dispatch published a cartoon by a Bolshevik named Robert Miner. Miner was later to be arrested in Tsarist Russia for revolutionary activities and, in fact, was himself bankrolled by famous Wall Street financiers. I mean, is there a communist that isn't bankrolled by Jewish bankers? Since we may safely assume that he knew his topic well, his cartoon is of great historical importance. It portrays Karl Marx with a book entitled Socialism under his arm, standing amid a cheering crowd on Wall Street. Gathered around and greeting him with enthusiastic handshakes are characters in silk hats, identified as John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, John D. Ryan of National City Bank, Morgan partner George W. Perkins, and Teddy Roosevelt, leader of the what party? The Progressive Party.
Yeah, I noticed Teddy Rosenfeld right there. He's got a top hat on.
Yep.
And he's wearing the glasses. His eyes aren't showing, but he's got that big mustache and that toothy grin.
Yeah, huh? The big old toothy face. Yeah. Now, who's the little guy named Andy standing behind Carl? That's got to be Carnegie. That's got to be Andrew Carnegie.
And actually, Ted, we are using Skype.
Yes. Yes, we are. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So what emerges from this sampling of events is a clear pattern of strong support for Bolshevism coming from the highest financial and political power centers in the United States, from men who supposedly were capitalists and who, according to conventional wisdom, should have been the mortal enemies of socialism and communism. Amen to that. So the question now remains, Pastor Steve, why in the world doesn't the average American know about this?
Oh, suppression of the news. It requires research, which requires work, which is too much because they're busy trying to survive. And they just don't want to know.
Yeah.
That's and amazing. They are the frog in the pot, and they've been turning up the heat and turning up the heat, and they're going to be boiled alive and never even realize it. I'd like to say a few words here.
Okay.
Between us about these journalists and the arrest of the Canadian lady. Hmm. We only have a few minutes left, 4 minutes. You see this egregious violation of people around us, of our people. It's coming here, folks. We've been trying to tell everybody that they will be suppressing us to the point of arresting people for posts on Twitter and YouTube and other things. And I suggest to our people that we start using code words instead of such blatant language. Professor Truth calls them smart words. I think right. It behooves us to basically CYA at this time. Because you cannot, I will tell you straight up, you can't do anything effective while you are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And they will gulag you like they did me. We're going to need boots on the ground, folks. Because the conflict, and I'm talking about real conflict, is getting closer and closer and closer. And we're going to have to gird our loins for war.
Yeah.
The Rademontine army is going to have to rise up, as Pastor Dan says. We're going to need to prepare. PPPPP. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. You're going to have to get your stuff together. You're going to have to get survival supplies. If nothing else, even if it doesn't happen within a certain timeline, you can use the stuff and replenish it. It's not going to hurt you to have some stuff to see YA around the house. You need to have a go plan. You need to have a destination. You need to have equipment. It's not gonna, as poor as I am. I've got a go bag, big go bag, on a two-wheel truck. Time to get ready, folks.
All right.
we're running out of time. It's 9:56.
You're talking about the show.
Yeah, we need. We're it's time to play the bumper music and
yes.
go.
So. All right, folks. I hope
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless and tell everybody you know that the Bolsheviks were supported by Wall Street capitalists, and you can explain why. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition, y'all. See you next time. Oh, what happened?